Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 195th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. Ladies and gentlemen, chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves as well. And if you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my ability as we get ready. It's coming close, ladies and gentlemen. It's coming very, very close. The 2014 FIFA World Cup is almost here. It will be a week and a day, 2 days if you want to count today, as we get ready for the biggest soccer party, the biggest football party in the world. And we'll be doing some sambas down in Brazil as we get ready to kick off this World Cup tournament as our host country, Brazil, gets ready to become really, really larger than life as always. One or two things at the moment. Want to make it official, obviously. David Villa, the former, not yet former, because he will still be probably playing with Atletico Madrid while on loan now officially, but he has signed the deal to join Manchester City / New York City FC next season. So I'm assuming there'll be a loan deal with either Atletico Madrid or just something I picked up that apparently Manchester City owns now, an Australian A-League club down there in the South Pacific. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens as we move on forward and talk more about New York City FC as we get probably closer towards the end of this season, or we start off with next season. So we shall see what's going to happen with that. But the big news coming off the wires, especially over in England from The Guardian, it's that talk once again. It's that talk about what happened within the executive committee and at the same time, possibly a couple of FAs from Africa, maybe some from CONCACAF, because we remember the story of Bin Hammam, who was at the time the Asian Football Confederation president, along with Jack Warner, who at the time was the CONCACAF president. And it looks like the so-called allegations, but between you and me, we all know those are not really allegations. These are facts. The facts were that Bin Hammam, who is from Qatar, had a lot of money, a lot of money, transferring $5 million U.S. to bribe the votes for the 2022 FIFA World Cup, which were at the same time a part of the 2018 festivities as we get ready to see who was going to take the World Cup home. Obviously, the English are still not happy that 2018 went to Russia. But because The Guardian, still like the attack dogs that they are when it comes to football, still kept on going and going, still kept on trying to find these documents. And apparently they've been found with the help of some sources from within FIFA itself. $5 million. $5 million. That Bin Hammam tried to steal the World Cup voting for Qatar. Now, once again, let me just say this right now. Would it be nice to have a World Cup in the Middle East? Would it be nice to have them host one? Yes, of course. Of course it would be nice. I think it would be pretty good if these things did happen. But the problem, once again, in the summertime, it's overly too hot, over 100 degrees too hot. I understand when it's summertime in South Florida, in Texas, anywhere near the southern border of the United States, if there's going to be World Cup games there, yes, it's going to be hot too, but at least we have the facilities. We have the facilities to handle this type of situation. And once again, forcing to play a World Cup in the winter months to negate this, you know, extreme temperatures in the summertime is a very good idea, but the problem is that most of the European leagues play around that time. There are some, and of course, let's not forget the South American leagues, the Central American leagues, Mexico, they have their split seasons. So how much of a break are we going to have? And don't forget these television contracts to broadcast the World Cup, to have their broadcasters in the booths of these stadiums. I mean, that's going to be huge too. And even though Bin Hammam has been exiled and Jack Warner quit and also exiled by the FIFA committee, the truth is that the money did make its rounds. The truth is that the money did reach the pockets of some of these executive committee members who basically should return the money. But once again, the level of corruption from the House of Football in Switzerland that is run by Sepp Blatter is just absolutely ridiculous and incorrigible. It is an absolute disgrace that the governing body for the game, for the sport, for the world has been treated like this and smacked in the face without even knowing it's happened over and over and over again. And no matter how many times Sepp Blatter says there was a mistake, the technical report said that these conditions are not meant to be played for the players and for the people coming. You know, that mistake was easily overlooked because, let's be honest, the money was just too good. The money was just too damn good for those members of the executive committee and gave it to Qatar on ill-gotten gains, not legitimate, ill-gotten gains. And here's the other question. Is Qatar ready to handle the amount of people coming into their country? I mean, I don't know how big the country is, to be honest. I wish I knew, so I can really get a real sense of how this is going to happen. But once again, it's just ridiculous. It is pathetic. And sadly, FIFA has proven once again that all they care about is their deep pockets. those members care about their deep pockets. And taking a look at Qatar, it doesn't look like it's a big country. It looks like it's just edging off of Africa. Somewhere in Saudi Arabia, not far from Iran, especially very close to the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. How much room is there in Qatar that says they can handle a World Cup? Because right now, to me, it doesn't look like they can handle it. How many stadiums are they going to make? Just three? Where's all about they can make an outdoor stadium air-conditioned? They have the tools, the technology. I don't see it anywhere, to be honest. I mean, let's be real here. You're going to have to make probably a retractable dome so that everyone can be relaxed and compete properly. But is there enough room to do so, to build three domed, retractable domed stadiums in Qatar? I don't see it. But once again, do they deserve it with all the human rights violations that we keep hearing about of all these guest workers coming from all these other countries dying because of the oppressive heat, no break, the unmanageable living conditions that they're told to stay in? You get your passport held by the foreman or by the person who's running the projects, and you're not allowed to go home. These are all the things I keep hearing about. Human rights violations. This is all I keep hearing about. And meanwhile, Australia is probably more than ready to host a World Cup for 2022. South Korea can definitely do it again for 2022. I don't have to tell you about our country, because everyone knows the United States can handle it. Because every NFL stadium or college football stadium will be available and ready for the World Cup. FIFA, no matter how many times you try to explain why it's good for Qatar to have the World Cup, no matter how many times you're going to try and claim this is the right way to go, do the right thing, please. Do the right thing. Take it away from Qatar. Do a revote with these three nations. Do a revote with Australia, with South Korea, and the United States. And if one of the three gets it, I think it would be a much better place to be at. Because I truly believe that one of the three, including the United States, should definitely be allowed to host a World Cup again, or for the first time, like Australia. And then we can discuss about how we can fix the situation in Qatar and the Middle East so they can truly earn a World Cup without stuffing dollar bills in your pockets. Ladies and gentlemen, got a great show for you tonight. Of course, we'll be talking about the NASL's spring season, the eighth round. The Red Bulls, of course, getting involved in this tournament we'll be talking about now, and their 1-1 draw with Sporting Kansas City last Tuesday, as well as the Dax McCarty injury situation. But, of course, we're going to talk about something big here as the CONCACAF did their Champions League group stage draw. And joining me now, who covers Mexico's national team, Liga MX on Big Soccer, it is my good friend John Jagu. John, good evening, and how are you tonight?
Hey, Daniel. How are you, sir?
Very good, very good. Before we get to the group stage draw, obviously, that was a big, big loss, I think. Obviously, you still have got plenty of players to get called into the national team by Herrera, but still Luis Montes suffered a very, very bad injury, and it sounds like he'll be – obviously, he'll miss the World Cup, but he should be available for anything else within 4 to 6 months.
Yeah, it was you know, it was tough. Now, I mean, I'm not saying he's irreplaceable because, I mean, there are certainly guys that can – I mean, that can play – his position and do it well. You know, the big problem is, as far as losing him is that he was far and away the player that was probably most in form on the whole team. I mean, he had a terrific season, had a great postseason with León. You know, and the worst part about it for me was that the injury was kind of caused by him. I mean, he was the one that kind of went in a little harsh into the ball. And, you know, if he wouldn't have gotten his leg broken, I mean, that was a red card tackle. I mean, it was nasty. And,
yeah.
You know, I think the ref kind of took pity on him, obviously, by what had happened. It was really kind of crushing. You know, it's not really something that, you know, I'm not saying that Mexico, you know, couldn't afford it or could afford it. I think that they'll be fine, you know, with or without him, just because, you know, they have players that can play his position and play his style, in my opinion, probably maybe even a little better. But because of the fact that he was in form, I think that was a big blow. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, anytime you lose a guy like that, I mean, you can just see the looks on the players' faces even after it had happened, and even throughout the rest of that game. I mean, they just, you know, it was a tough pill for them to swallow because, you know, that's a group that's been together for a few weeks and they know each other, they're hanging out together, they're having fun together, and they just don't want to see one of their guys go down like that. And it was unfortunate, but. You know, they're playing here in about an hour or so in Chicago against Bosnia, and it looks like, you know, there's going to be the guy who's going to replace him in the midfield. They're going to go with Peña and Herrera, and then have J.J. Vasquez do the holding midfield role. So we'll see how Mexico reacts. I think that ultimately what's going to end up happening is I think that the midfield will probably start tonight. Will probably start the World Cup, but I think it gives also the coach a little bit more less headaches as far as who to choose from when he wants to bring somebody in, because the guys he can bring in now give him, you know, to just dependent on which way he wants to go. So, you know, sometimes there's a silver lining to these things, and to me, the big silver lining is that a player like Marco Fabián, who I think is fantastic, and I think that when he's in the mood, as you know, as good as anybody that Mexico has, in my opinion, one of Mexico's best players, because he just has qualities that other players just don't have. And, you know, this is definitely a huge opportunity for him to step into Luis Montes' role and do exactly what Luis does, except only on the left side. And so I think that there's a real good opportunity for him to have a good a World Cup. And if he has a good World Cup, then obviously, you know, that means that his, you know, his career could advance as well. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I understood Rafa Márquez also picked up an injury. I don't know how serious that was. Is he okay? He's going to continue for Mexico in this World Cup?
Yeah,
it doesn't sound
fine.
Serious.
He's not going to play tonight. He actually practiced yesterday. You know, the big concern, and it's something that we raise all the time, is that if you're going to play friendlies in the U.S., be sure to pick stadiums that have natural grass fields. The thing that happened with Rafa was that he got stepped on. You know, I mean, it never feels good to get a, you know, a full cleat on the toe. I mean, it's not, and he ended up getting it right below his toe. But the problem is when you play at a place like Cowboy Stadium that have concrete below, you know, maybe an inch and a half of sod, I mean, you're basically getting stepped on, you know, on a concrete floor. There's no give. Whereas, you know, if you're out like at Soldier Field or some of these other places that have natural grass, then, you know, the turf gives a whole lot more, and it probably wouldn't have been nearly as serious. So, you know, for one-off friendlies that are just, you know, friendlies to have a friendly, fine. You know, I understand. But when you're getting ready for a tournament like that, I mean, for God's sakes, you know, there's, you know, I mean, I know the Jerry's a nice stadium. The Cotton Bowl is 20 minutes away. It seats just as many people, and it's a grass stadium. So, I mean, come on. I mean, they have to, see, those are the kind of things that kind of, you know, irk me a little bit when it comes to the FMF. They always take the money is always the most important decision factor, and the players' health is secondary. And hopefully, you know, stuff like this will we'll get them to realize, hey, you know what, maybe we should actually consider the player's health first instead of how much money we're going to make.
Absolutely. And the shame for Montez, of course. Leon, his club with Rafa Marquez, they do go into pot A in the this past couple of weeks. The CONCACAF had their group draw. So let's go ahead and go group by group here. We'll start off with the group one. Pachuca will face from Honduras, Real España, and Guatemala, Club Deportivo Municipal. I would assume España would be a tough opponent for Pachuca, but I got a funny feeling maybe that they'll be able to win the group here.
Yeah, they I mean, I'm not going to say they have any problem. You know, I think that, you know, both Municipal and Real España are traditional powers in Central America. Pachuca's a young team, so, you know, depending on how seriously they take the tournament, obviously they've taken it seriously in the past because they won it a few times, but, you know, who are they going to start? If they want to let their young guys, you know, keep going, I think that Pachuca could have a real good chance of doing real well in the whole tournament. But if they decide that they want to give even, you know, some of their younger, less experienced players a chance, then, you know, you never know what can happen. But, you know, I mean, it's not an easy draw by any means. I think any time that you draw two Central American teams, as you know, it's always hard to go down to Central America to win, regardless of where you play or who you play. I mean, it's just a hard, hard place to win. So I think Pachuca, if they decide to take the tournament a little seriously, I think they'll do a little better. If they, you know, have a couple of mixed rosters, then I think that it's going to be a little bit more challenging for them to advance, just because of the fact that they're so young and they haven't really played and stuff like this before. So I would like to see them go ahead and play with their full rosters. And then if they do that, then I think the chances of them advancing out of the group are going to be a lot better than if they decide to mix it up with some of their youth products.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see what happens there. Group two, from the United States and MLS, we got Sporting Kansas City from Costa Rica. Of course, the Dragon, unless now they're probably known as the Big S now. Deportivo Saprissa from Costa Rica and Real Esteli from Nicaragua. While Sporting Kansas City does go in as the MLS Cup champions from last year, you know, Estadio Saprissa is always and has always been a house of horrors. It doesn't even matter, you know, how good or how bad the team is down there. That turf is absolutely terrible. Everyone is right up close onto the field. I mean, I think this could be a real, real test for Sporting Kansas City when they play against Deportivo Saprissa. Esteli, Nicaragua, I don't know how good they really are, but I know Saprissa will give Sporting Kansas City a run for their money.
Oh, yeah, I think it's going to definitely come down to those two teams. Esteli, I think, is just there to kind of fill out the group. It's just going to depend on you know, what, you know, again, what Sporting Kansas City wants to do, because at that time they're going to be, you know, they're going to be in toward the end of their season. You know, are they going to want to make the long trips down to Costa Rica and to Nicaragua to waste the, you know, the resources and the energy for their players when they could, you know, rest them and maybe make a playoff run? It's always a difficult challenge for MLS teams, and I think it's one of the reasons why we don't see them go through as often as people would like. But, you know, Saprissa is a good team, and they have, you know, it's it, you know, makes up a lot of the folks that are on the Costa Rican national team, and we know that that's a good team. So it's going to be very difficult, I think, for Sporting Kansas City to make it through, especially if they decide to, you know, use some of their reserves and if they go down to Costa Rica with reserves or some reserves. You know, I think that the only way they can do it is if they play Saprissa home and away at full strength.
And Saprissa, who's also owned by Vergara, of course, all the players on Saprissa, like Guadalajara, they're all Costa Rican. So there's not one foreign player right now on Saprissa unless he sold the club that I'm not aware of.
No, you're right. It's how they do things. I mean, they're just, you know, it's his one team that's actually run pretty well. You know, like I said, I mean, they have, you know, there's a reason why they're in the tournament every year. It's because, you know, they're always, you know, a cut above the rest in the Costa Rican league. And they have, you know, they've been able to bring in some very talented players through the ranks, through their youth academy. And I mean, there's a reason why Costa Rica has done well to qualify for World Cups, and with the cornerstone of their team being Saprissa. Like I said, it's going to be, you know, Sporting Kansas City is going to have to make a choice on which tournament they're going to want to go after in the fall when these games start picking up. And, you know, depending on what their position is in the standings, I think it's going to go a long way to determine as to whether or not they're going to pursue getting that quarterfinal bid for the Champions League.
Yep, absolutely. The New York Red Bulls are drawn in Group 3. They'll have the winner of the Canadian Championship, and that's a 1-1 draw after the first leg, and the next second leg will be this Wednesday night over at Stade Saputo, and then Club Deportivo FAS, F-A-S, from El Salvador. So I think we both agree that FAS could be that team that both sides, depending on who comes out of that Canadian Championship second leg, and the Red Bulls are going to have to be careful with, because they are one of the top sides in El Salvador.
Yeah, they're a traditional Salvadorian power. You know, they're going to play in that crazy stadium, the Cuscatlan, when they go down there. And, you know, if they get a New York team, then that place will probably be sold out. It's a crazy atmosphere down there. They're just, you know, they're, you know, again, it's one of those teams where, you know, the base of their national team, or, you know, just, you know, their great players come out of certain teams. FAS is one of those teams. You know, any Red Bulls fan, or even the, you know, if it turns out being the Impact, or is it the Impact or Toronto FC? Is that who's?
It's going to be either Toronto. It's either Toronto FC or Montreal Impact. Their second leg is tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean they cannot underestimate FAS. There's just no way. And if they do, then you know, I think it's going to be. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if FAS makes it through. Now, one of those teams should win. But again, it's just going to depend on, you know, what they have to deal with when it comes to their own with their own tournament, and, you know, if they go down to El Salvador and FAS, you know, sneaks up on them, then that's going to put some serious pressure on their home games. It's going to be crazy. Now, I would expect the Red Bulls to go ahead and make it through that, but you never know. I mean, it's one of those crazy things. And I do know this: if they do underestimate FAS, then I think that they'll have problems. I don't think they will, because I think that, you know, anyone who follows CONCACAF soccer knows that there are certain teams in Central America that are considered, you know, the pillars of their local leagues, and FAS is definitely one of those in El Salvador. And usually that means that they're a big supplier of national team products. And so when you play a team like that, you're basically playing half the national team. And
yep.
And they will definitely take it seriously. So, you know, that's just the you know, the gamble that the other teams will have to deal with. And I mean, I hope for Red Bull's fans' sake that doesn't happen. But I mean, I think that right now, I think that you would have to consider this group out of the ones we've already talked about, you know, the one that's easily the most in contention.
Yep, I will. Yep, definitely agree with you there. Group 4 will have Panama's Toro FC, DC United from the United States, who won the U.S. Open Cup last year after a horrible regular season, and from Jamaica, Waterhouse FC. I'm not really familiar with Waterhouse from Jamaica, but obviously Taro can give a challenge to DC United for that top spot.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how the Panamanian teams have done in this tournament. I mean, they just come out of nowhere and just really put up some shock results. So, I mean, I would expect more of the same, and that's a long trip for DC United to go all the way down to Panama from where they are. I mean, it's got to be at least, you know, a 6-7-8 hour flight. You know, the Jamaican squad, I'm kind of like with you. I'm not really all that familiar with it. You know, I think that if DC United can go and handle business in Panama, and, you know, if they can come out with a draw, then I think they'll have no problem advancing. But, you know, again, you know, the Panama, you know, in my opinion, is the country that's really benefited the most from this tournament, because I think that it's proven to them that their team can not only hang on the club level, they can hang on the national team level, and I fully expect. I mean, they have. I mean, let's face it, they you know, one of the few countries in Central America that have a steady supply of really good athletes, and I don't think that's going to change. So I if Panama can do it right, I think that they can certainly, you know, they kind of missed out on this one, but I think that they will certainly be someone to deal with and contend with, not just at the club level, but the national team level. So those Taro DC United games are going to be very, very, very exciting and very interesting. And you know, obviously, if whoever can sneak the most away points, whether it's goals or if they can, you know, sneak a win or whatever, is obviously, I think out of those two will advance. I don't think the Jamaican side can really stand a chance against either of the two. But you know, again, it'll definitely come down to Taro and DC United and just how each of them does on their away leg in that particular time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Group 5, we have Club Deportivo Olimpia from Honduras, the Portland Timbers from the United States, and Alpha United FC from Guyana. I think the only way the Timbers are going to lose that top spot, because I think Olimpia will definitely give them a run for the money, but the Timbers all the way on the West Coast in the Pacific Northwest, John, they're going to have to take long flights to get to Central America to play Olimpia and Alpha United on the road. Well, it all depends on how they handle their travel. That's the only way I can see Portland getting eliminated.
Yeah, and Guyana's a little further than I mean, so Guyana's in South America, so that's going to be a long, long trip for the Portland Timbers. You know, maybe it's one of those things where they might reward their guys. I have no idea, because that is definitely a long way to go to play a soccer game. You know, Olimpia, again, one of those, you know, one of the traditional powers in Central America. They're have done real, real well in this tournament in the past. It's going to be a dogfight. I mean, you know, the Central American teams do relatively well in this stage, and you know, especially at home. And again, I know one thing that that the Olimpia has in favor of it is it probably has to travel the least. I mean, they all have to travel a lot, but they're probably the ones that have to travel the least. I don't see how Portland could not. I mean, if Portland doesn't make it through this group, then something, you know, something happened. You know, you know, they could have a bad game. But I mean, I think that if Portland plays their style of soccer, they have such a great crowd in Portland that they should be able to make it through. And that would be great for the knockouts. To I'm sure that Portland in March is probably a little different than Portland in August, so I'm sure that the Timbers fans would love to see some Champions League games played there in 2015. So hopefully for their sake it'll happen, and I think it will. I think that Portland should make it through without any problem.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Let's hope we get some good matches here. Group 6, we have Aluenza from Costa Rica, the defending CONCACAF Champions League winners, Cruz Azul from Mexico, and Chorrillo FC from Panama. And I have to say that you're right, because some of these club teams, like Arabe Unido, has come out of Panama to play very hard and to frustrate these other clubs that have been in their groups with everything they try, all the gamesmanship. We'll see what Chorrillo is going to do here, but this could be a toss-up of all three.
Yeah, this could be a tough group. Now, it's all going to depend on how Cruz Azul. What I think that you know they would probably be considered the favorites. Excuse me, the favorites, but it's going to depend on how their roster shakes out, because they're going to probably have some guys moving, and you know, I mean, Cruz Azul, you know, despite the fact that they haven't won a local league in so long, they're easily and have been the most consistent team in Mexico since I've been watching. I mean, I'm not talking back in the 70s when they were the superpower, where they won 8 championships. I mean, they're always in the fight. They are always, always, always in the fight. They're just a very, very well-managed club, well, at least when it comes to the soccer side of things. They find players that fit what they want to do, and they just go out and do it. And, you know, they play in a stadium in Mexico City that isn't all that big, and a real, real historic neighborhood. It's a great little club, Cruz Azul. I think that they're, you know, they've run into some bad luck recently, you know, over the past 10, 15 years or so, at least on the local side. But you know, that's a club that, you know, don't blink, because they'll probably, you know, end up in the semifinals again in this tournament, you know, especially if they make it through this group. I mean, it's obviously out of the Mexican team, it's probably the team that has the toughest way through, but, you know, for Cruz Azul, I don't think, I don't really think it matters. I think that they will find a way. They are like the regular season and first couple of round champs. I mean, they just managed to go through that without any issues. So, you know, I'll expect Cruz Azul to do it. I think it's going to be a little tougher for them. So I don't think they'll win all four games, but I think that they'll, you know, I think they'll probably win two, and then, you know, if they can manage to get, you know, between 1 and 3 points on their away side, on their away games, then that should be fine.
Now, of course, Cruz Azul goes in as the pot B member, because this next group, Leon, wins both the Apertura and Clausura seasons, which allowed Cruz Azul to go into the CONCACAF Champions League, and they're in Group 7 with Isidro Metapan from El Salvador and Belmopan Bandits from Belize. Now, I want to ask you this question, John, because I want to make sure I have the information correct. Because Leon wins both titles, the Apertura in 2013 and the Clausura in 2014, does that give them something like another championship of some sort, or just means that they just won both seasons?
No, it just means that they won both seasons.
Okay.
I mean, the funny thing is that if you look at if they put both seasons together and just did it based purely on table, you know, who was at the top of that, it was actually Cruz Azul that would have won the whole thing.
Okay.
But Cruz, but you have to remember, Leon came into the most recent playoff as the 8th seed, which, of course, the number one seed was Cruz Azul. I'm sure they were thinking, man, we've had such a great season, and just our luck to draw the team that, you know, that's like the worst possible 8th seed they could ever draw. Now, you know, Leon, I think that, it's a club that takes tournaments very seriously. They took the Libertadores extremely seriously. Unfortunately for them, they ran into a team that that they just could not figure out. And they played them 4 times, and each time they had no answer for them. Those things happen. I mean, sometimes you just play up against a team you just don't match up well against. They're going to be interesting to see who's going to be on Leon when this tournament rolls around, because I expect they'll, obviously Montes is going to be out. Carlos Peña, who is on Mexico's World Cup team, you know, it's already been said that he's already signed a contract to play over in Europe. How many more players, are they going to lose? How many more players are they going to lose? What are they going to bring in? So the Leon that we've seen in the past year is not going to be the Leon that plays in the tournament. Now, I will say that they're, you know, like Pachuca, they're a very, very well-run team. They have a fantastic coach, a coach that wouldn't surprise me at all if he decided at the end of the World Cup, if Uruguay comes calling, that he'll go and coach Uruguay's national team. Mr. Matosas is just a great coach. He's done a fantastic job with Leon. He was the one that brought him in from promotion. He was coaching him in the second division. He's coached him these past couple of years in the first division. It's just a great. They're a great team. They're fun to watch. They play a beautiful brand of soccer. They're just they really are a joy to watch, and it's very, very good for Mexico that Leon is going to be one of the bases of their team, because they just have been a terrific team over the past couple of years. And, again, I don't think they should have any problem beating Metapan or the team from Belize. And knowing Leon, it's a tournament that they'll take seriously, because, you know, they want to go play in that Club World Cup. They want to see what they can do against, some of the bigger boys, and this would be a great way for them to do it. And so I fully expect Leon to have no issue in this leg.
I expect Leon to score 20 goals against Belmopan Bandits, 10 in Belize and 10 in Mexico. I firmly believe that, because I'm telling you right now, Leon is going to go advance, even though they're going to lose Montes for the group stage. Hopefully he'll be there for the knockout stages. And wouldn't it be ironic if the club right now that Rafa Marquez plays for, which is Leon, and they are top of Group 7, let's say the Red Bulls are top of Group 3, and both of these sides are going to face each other in the quarterfinals, depending on how everything shapes up.
That would be great.
That would be interesting. Yeah. that would be very interesting to see what would happen there. Finally, Group 8, Comunicaciones from Guatemala, Club America from Mexico, and a friend of mine who's the general manager of Bayamón FC out of Puerto Rico, Ignacio Rodriguez. That's Group 8. And, I mean, I don't want to, you know, predict any ill will to my friend Ignacio, but I'm going to say this right now. I think it's either going to be Comunicaciones or Club America coming out of Group 8. I just don't see Bayamón surviving.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be tough for them. Now, of course, you know, we say that, and then we remember, you know, how great the Islanders did when this tournament first started.
That's very
true. A couple
true.
Years ago. So, yeah, I mean, you know,
true.
Again, you never know. Now, I think Club America, with the way that they exited the championship last year, I think that they're going to have something. They're going to probably have something to prove. So I'm sure that they would be, you know, probably play with a little bit more ambition than they did in the last one. A little bit more with conviction. So I would expect them. Now again, but then again, you know, Comunicaciones is one of those teams, one of those you know, traditional powers in Central America outside of, you know, in Guatemala, and you know, teams have proven that they can do well at the Azteca. And you know, for a tie like this, the Azteca is not going to be full. And, you know, just like Alajuelense did last year, if you can beat Club America at home, you know, there's a good chance that you can hold them off at the Azteca. And if that's the case, then I think that, you know, Comunicaciones has a decent chance to make it to the next round. Now, of course, it all hinges on whether or not they beat them. If they don't beat them at home, then Club America, you know, goes through without any problem. But if they do beat them at home, if they do get that home win in Guatemala, then I think that it's, you know, I think the chances, obviously their chances increase quite a bit, because I think both teams will handle the, teams will handle the Puerto Rico side.
Yeah, absolutely. But like you said before, we didn't think the Puerto Rico Islanders were going to do anything, and all of a sudden, boom, they became the first, you know, all the way to the semifinal. I couldn't believe it. Who
made
they
it to the
think?
Final.
They should have. They really, really should have.
Yeah, it was Cruz Azul.
Yeah.
I think it was Cruz Azul.
Oh,
and they
got
him to extra time.
Yeah.
And in extra time, Cruz Azul, actually, they scored a goal, and Cruz Azul had to score two in extra time in order to advance. It was crazy. Yeah, it was nuts.
It was. Oh, I remember. It was crazy because, you know, this is the one thing I like about the CONCACAF Champions League. And I think it's the fairest way to do it, because as you know as well as I know, in the UEFA Champions League, whoever's the road team in the second leg and you go into extra time, away goals still count. Here, when it goes into extra time, it's taken away, which is the right thing to do.
Yeah, I agree. It's like once the full 90 is done, then – well, see, personally, Daniel, I mean, I know that this is like heresy, but I mean, I was always a big fan of the golden goal. You know, people always say, well, you need time to, you know, if someone scores, you need time to equalize. Like, no, you don't. You have 90, you have 90 minutes to win the game. And that's why I love the golden goal. I thought the golden goal was a great, because I hate penalties. I hate games decided about penalties, because usually the teams I follow aren't very good at them. So like the last thing I want to see them do is kick penalties.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
absolutely.
I've always been a big fan of the golden goal, and I don't know why they got rid of it. Well, I know why they got rid of it, because the European teams didn't like losing in sudden death, and so you're thinking, well, you had 90 minutes, guys. I mean, you could have won the game in 90 minutes, but you know, teams would prefer to, when they go into extra time, to like play for penalties and stuff. It's like, you know,
absolutely.
You're right, though. It's a much fairer way to do it.
No, it really is, and I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I also agree that the golden goal should never have gone away. By the way, just want to let everyone know this is going on in Twitter. This is from my friend Juan Arango. Covers South American football on Gold TV and beIN Sports and everywhere else. Apparently, the Portuguese FA has announced that Cristiano Ronaldo is suffering from patellar tendonitis. So right now, there's a little bit of a knock on the armor for Portugal in the USA's group. Very interesting situation we have here before this World Cup gets underway here. Oh, my God, John. It's just amazing. How many players are injured and they're still on the roster, or the heartbreak for Montes and other things, especially Falcao for Colombia? That's a big, big loss for Colombia. Even though I think they can recover from that, it's still a big loss.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was kind of hoping that Falcao wouldn't make the team, only because I don't know how many times I've seen, you know, guys in the World Cup, you know, try and come back and then be nothing like they were, and they end up just, you know, giving up a roster spot to a guy who probably could have made a difference. I mean, I've seen it, you know, Zico did it in 86, and, you know, just, you know, most recently, like Drogba and even David Beckham in so, I mean, it's happened before. But, I mean, obviously, if Falcao was at full strength, he'd be, you know, I mean, Colombia would be one of the prohibitive favorites to. But, see, that shows you how unbelievably deep Colombia is, that they can go ahead and say, you know what, I think we're going to be okay without Falcao. Because they have, I mean, their roster is so good, Daniel, that the goal scientist didn't even make the cut. Think about that. I mean, that guy is terrific. And he wasn't even on the 30. That's how deep Colombia
wow.
is.
No, I believe you. I believe you. I went to the big soccer bar in New York City, Legends, down at the Football Factory. It's all the one big area. They showed some of the South American qualifiers down there. And, yeah, no, Colombia, even without Falcao, they are that good. They are that
scary.
They
are terrific.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
they just
beat Brazil 1-0 in a friendly over the weekend.
Oh,
they're a solid team. Yeah.
Wow.
They are scary good.
Oh, my God. That's just unbelievable stuff. That's crazy stuff with Colombia. But I'll tell you this much, Juan. I mean, John, sorry about that. I apologize. I'm not going to call you Juan Arango by accident. That's my fault. But anyway, John, just to say this CONCACAF Champions League, once this World Cup is over, I really think we're going to have some great matches in this edition. Every club, or the majority of them, are such big and strong, and they're going to find ways to get through. And then I think it'll be interesting to see who will go to the quarterfinals in the 2015 end of this tournament.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, I think that, you know, folks are expecting, you know, the four Mexican sides and four of the five MLS sides to make it through again. I mean, I think that if it holds true to form, that would be the case. I'm still a little unsure as to why MLS deserves four teams, because they just haven't really proven that they deserve four teams, other than the fact that it's just good TV markets. I would prefer. I think right now, I think MLS needs to earn four teams. I think that if they cut it down to three and gave a gave another one to, you know, maybe a Costa Rican side or even another Mexican side. In all honesty, that's the one area that I think that CONCACAF, I think, just shows just how desperate they are to make the tournament a little bit more marketable. Especially, you know, in the big markets in the U.S. and Mexico. I think that it's not very sporting. I think that some of the other countries might deserve that spot just as much or more so than MLS. So that's my only concern with mm-hmm. that. I think that, you know, what would I like to see? You know, I think that the, you know, and it could be maybe that four teams from MLS and Mexico might be too much. You know, maybe, you know, I know that they're trying to, you know, they're always trying to figure out a way. I just think that after a while, it just kind of gets boring if all four teams from Mexico make it through to the semifinals. And I'm not saying it's going to happen every year, but it has happened quite a bit. And so that's an area where I think that CONCACAF might take a second look and say, you know what, maybe we need to, you know, or here's an even better one. How about if they this is where I think would be lots of fun. If they put the fourth Mexican team and the fourth MLS team in a playoff just to get into the tournament, now that would be good TV right there.
That would be very good. I would definitely agree with you on that, and that would be a great, great way to at least force some sort of higher competition before you get into the knockout stages. But all I can say is this, is that right now Major League Soccer has to look at areas in the southern end of the country to put an MLS team in, and find a way to make the scheduling a little bit earlier in February. I mean, that's the truth. That's what MLS has to do, because obviously, as you know, Liga MX starts off, what, middle of January, goes into mm-hmm. February and March, and it's like they're already ready to go. For MLS, it's only been one game, and then they go straight into the quarterfinal first leg, And then that's
right.
their,
and it's
that
not
basically
just
their...
Daniel. I mean, Mexico, you know, the Mexican teams of the whole rest of the continent, I mean, they've been playing since September. They might have had like a month
right.
off in December. I mean, the MLS
right.
sides hadn't been playing in, you know, 3 or 4 months. And that's where I think that they really run into the issue. And that's why, you know, I think that the MLS should seriously consider going to the just because of the nature of where they fall on the calendar. And I know that it gets really cold in the winter, and I totally understand that. But it seems to me that if they went to a two schedule or a two season schedule, I think, and then started in July or August or whatever it is, you know, and play
mm-hmm.
through October, November, and then take a couple of
mm-hmm.
months off, pick it up again,
mm-hmm.
I think it would do them a world of good.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No, I definitely agree with you there. It would be interesting to see what's going to happen. But here's the one problem that I've seen. Now, I don't know if anyone's ever mentioned this, but this is what I've seen. There's too many supporters saying, well, we got to be like Europe. And then there's too many supporters saying, well, we got to be like what's going on with South America. Obviously, the NASL has the two-season schedule. Everyone from Mexico all the way down to South America has the two-season schedule. Maybe I think I've heard Argentina's going to go full season now. To change things up. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've heard. But, you know, there's too many difference of an opinion, or as they usually say, there's too many cooks to spoil the broth.
Right. No, it's definitely something that the MLS has to really seriously consider. You know, and we're going to see it in a few weeks with the U.S. playing World Cup games. I mean, they're going to play, you know, these guys have been playing for, you know, 2 or 3 months, and they're going to go up against guys that are, you know, that have been playing for, you know, 7 or 8 months and are just at a different level. And it's going to be, you know, I think it's going to be difficult for the U.S. And I think that, you know, I'd say the one thing that scares me about the U.S. and it's something that, you know, that it's, I mean, I see it in every sport. If you're an offensive-minded coach, the last thing you care about is the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And for Jurgen to keep, you know, trying to find, you know, the right solution for, you know, starting different guys each time. I mean, that's like the worst thing you could do, and I'm
yep.
afraid it's going to cost them badly. You know, and probably the first couple of games. I think that that's a not a good way to go. I think they need to know who you're playing next to,
mm-hmm.
and. Because to me, it's like the offensive line. I mean, you can't tinker with your offensive line because when you do, you just nothing's going to work. And I feel
right.
the same way about the defense. You can't tinker with your back four because, you know, they have to be able to know where. Because you know, what if a guy calls for a trap and a guy doesn't know that he called? I mean, it just too many things can go wrong.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right there, John. Listen, thank you very much. Go ahead and enjoy the friendly. Mexico's playing who again? Tonight.
Bosnia in Chicago. It should be a 50-50 crowd because the Bosnians, they definitely support their team in the Midwest, so they'll be out in force.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Boy, oh, boy, that's going to be a fun one to watch. Take care, John. Thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Like I said, Daniel, I'll be available for all 7 games when Mexico plays in the World Cup.
Yes, you will. Not if Brazil beats you first. But anyway, have a good night, John, and enjoy the match.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's John Jagu, covers Mexico for Big Soccer, Liga MX, and the national team. Let me just say this right now once again. John Jagu will be joining me and Carter Kirschneier reviewing Mexico's World Cup matches from the group stage and as far as they can go to get to the final. And just to reiterate to everyone, obviously, Jonathan Johnson, who covers French Ligue 1 and the French national team for French Football Weekly, ESPN FC, beIN Sports, Bleacher Report, Europe. We're also going to have some ex-friends of mine from the old original Champion Soccer Radio Network, Diana Main Game, Germano, covers Italy, Gary Gazza Richards, covering England, Eric Krukauer, who will be covering Portugal with us. We might have some other guests as well as we keep on going. But definitely for sure, we're going to have a lot of fun with this World Cup this year. You can catch me on every single World Cup date, the review shows from the beginning of the group stage all the way into the final down in Brazil for the FIFA World Cup. blogtalkradio.com/4YearsTeamsFire. You can catch all World Cup review show games here. Don't miss it. Don't forget it. If you can't catch it live, you can always catch it on the archive. Every single World Cup date, we will review all days, all games of that day. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be exciting. And, yes, don't forget, there will be a U.S. Open Cup review show here and there as we get ready for this exciting day, games, and everything else that's going on. Here we go, the North American Soccer League segment. As we talk about these past matches, it's getting interesting. There's only one round left, and it's really not that hard to tell why there's only one round left, because all that's left is to see who will win the 2014 spring season of the North American Soccer League. Here we go with the matches. Ottawa with a 1-0 victory over Edmonton. It was the 90th minute Tony Heineman who converts it for the Fury as they beat their Canadian rivals in FC Edmonton in the NASL. Edmonton won over Ottawa in the Amway Canadian Championships for that CCL spot as they faced Montreal. But, of course, Montreal eliminates Edmonton in that one. But Ottawa, they take care of business here. Final score, Ottawa Fury 1, FC Edmonton 0. Carolina Railhawks at home defeating the Tampa Bay Rowdies by a final of 2-0. It is Mike Grella in the 18th minute that made it 1-0 for the Railhawks, and then Ty Cipollone got that second one in the 71st minute to end it for the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Final score, Carolina Railhawks 2, the Tampa Bay Rowdies 0. Fort Lauderdale Strikers hosting the New York Cosmos, and unfortunately for the Strikers, even though they played well, it was too much for them as the Cosmos came in to the second half scoreless after one half. Mad Stokalainen in the 64th minute made it 1-0 for the Cosmos. Jimmy Ockford, who scored in the U.S. Open Cup match against the Brooklyn Italians, gets the second goal for the Cosmos in the 83rd. 2 minutes later, Danny Satella makes it 3-0 for the Cosmos as they get a big victory away from Short Stadium. Final score, Fort Lauderdale Strikers 0, the New York Cosmos 3. Indy 11 hosting the San Antonio Scorpions. That was the ESPN FC match stream of the week, of the round. And it was a hell of a game, all in the second half, all that action, even though both sides were fighting tooth and nail. Unfortunately for the Indy 11, they lose this one by a final of 2-1. It was Billy Forbes in the 52nd minute that put San Antonio ahead, but it's Blake Smith who got a hat trick against the Dayton Dutch Lions in U.S. Open Cup play last Wednesday, who got his fourth in two matches. And that made the score 1-1, but it was Walter Restrepo in the 90th minute that got San Antonio the 3 points, and they jump into third place, tied for second on points, as the Scorpions win this one 2-1, and they defeat Indy 11, who still go winless in league season. They got their first win of their existence in the U.S. Open Cup against the Dayton Dutch Lions. Final score, Indy 11-1, San Antonio Scorpions 2. And then, of course, the big question, Minnesota United on the road against the Atlanta Silverbacks at Silverbacks Park. The Silverbacks knew they had to take care of business, and they did so. The Silverbacks, unfortunately, losing to Minnesota United by a final of 2-1. Greg Jordan made it 1-0 Minnesota in the 52nd minute. Christian Ramirez made it 2-0 Minnesota in the 74th minute. Even though Kawadwu Poco pulled one back in the 85th minute, just couldn't steal an equalizer from Minnesota, and that would be it. Final score at Silverbacks Park outside of Atlanta in Georgia. Atlanta Silverbacks 1, Minnesota United FC 2. Standings. 8 matches have been played, 1 match remaining. 1 single match remaining for all clubs. Minnesota United in first place, 6 wins, a draw, and a loss, 19 points. The New York Cosmos and the San Antonio Scorpions are tied on points with 16. Identical record of 5 wins, a draw, and 2 losses. The Cosmos, however, have a plus 10 on the differential with the Scorpions with a plus 4. So as of right now, the Cosmos in second place with a plus 10. San Antonio in third place with plus 4. A lot of things need to happen for this situation to go either the Scorpions' way or the Cosmos' way. We'll see what happens, obviously. Fourth place, Carolina Railhawks eliminated from the spring title. 4 wins, 2 draws, 2 losses, plus 1 on the differential for fourth place. Fort Lauderdale Strikers in fifth place with 12 points, 4 wins, 4 losses, even on the differential. In sixth place, the Ottawa Fury with 3 wins, a draw, and 4 losses with 10 points on a plus 2. Tampa Bay Rowdies in 7th place tied with points with the Silverbacks. Tampa Bay, 2 wins, 3 draws, 3 losses. Atlanta Silverbacks, 3 wins and 5 losses. But Tampa Bay has a minus 5. Atlanta has a minus 8 on the differential. So Tampa Bay in 7th, Atlanta in 8th. In 9th place, FC Edmonton. A win, 2 draws, 5 losses for 5 points, a minus 5 differential. And once again, the Indy 11, 8 matches played, no wins, 3 draws, 5 losses. They've scored 11. They've allowed 17 with a minus 6 on the differential with only 3 points in dead last. But once again, Indy 11 has an opportunity to earn their first win of this NESL spring season. If not, they're just going to have to wait for the fall season to get underway in July. So that is the standings right now. Now, once again, Minnesota United, first place, 19 points. The Cosmos and the Scorpions are tied for second place with 16 points, but the Cosmos in second with a plus 10, San Antonio with a plus 4. Tiebreakers from the NESL, as always, goal differentials first. And if it's not on goal differential, then the next one will be total goals. Still even, we go to head-to-head record. Now, let's all go to the schedule, the final game of this marathon called the 2014 spring season. One game left. One game remaining for the spring title that is at the moment in favor of Minnesota United FC. Because San Antonio and the Cosmos are going to try to leapfrog. Now, here's the situation with the schedule. This Saturday, June 7th, let's just get it right out of the way. There's 3 games on Saturday on the 7th of June. There's 2 games on Sunday, the 8th of June. The one that doesn't matter right now, Atlanta Silverbacks hosting the Indy 11 at Atlanta Silverbacks Park, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. The 2 games that do matter, the Tampa Bay Rowdies hosting Minnesota United FC at Al Lang Stadium, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. San Antonio Scorpions hosting the Fort Lauderdale Strikers at Toyota Field, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central. Go to the situation right now. All Minnesota United needs is a point. 1 point. 1 single point to win the spring season in 2014. one point will do it. If they do draw on the road at Tampa Bay, Minnesota will win the title. A win obviously will give them the title. Now, if Minnesota United loses and San Antonio Scorpions defeats Fort Lauderdale, right now the differential between the Cosmos and the Scorpions is 6. Now, I don't know if San Antonio has enough in them to score 6 goals against Fort Lauderdale. But a win by San Antonio and a loss by Minnesota United, San Antonio will temporarily, plus, of course, got to score more than 6 goals. San Antonio, at that moment, can win the spring season. But on Sunday, June the 8th, the game that doesn't mean anything, we'll get that out of the way. FC Edmonton hosting Carolina RailHawks at Clark Stadium, 4 o'clock Eastern, 2 o'clock Mountain. But the game that does matter is the New York Cosmos hosting the Ottawa Fury at James M. Short Stadium on the campus of Hofstra University, and that's a 5 o'clock Eastern time start. If Ottawa goes into Long Island and plays spoiler, depending on the results with Minnesota at Tampa and San Antonio hosting Fort Lauderdale, the Cosmos have to win to at least get one or two tiebreakers on their side. Because if the Cosmos win, I bet you they'll have a couple of tiebreakers on their side. And that is what has to be very, very careful right now with both Minnesota and San Antonio. If Minnesota draws or wins against the Tampa Bay Rowdies at Al Lang Stadium, then it's all over. The other two matches don't even count. Minnesota United FC wins or draws. San Antonio's match against Fort Lauderdale doesn't matter. The New York Cosmos final game of the spring season at home against Ottawa does not matter. It will only matter if Minnesota loses. And then we got ourselves a hell of a finish. So it's going to be, again, it's going to be interesting to watch, interesting to see. And then these teams will have themselves a World Cup break, with the exception of those playing in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And, of course, those teams in round 3 are going to be the New York Cosmos, Indy 11, Minnesota United, Atlanta Silverbacks, Carolina RailHawks, and the San Antonio Scorpions. Is going to be interesting. So once again, those teams in the U.S. Open Cup from the North American Soccer League, the New York Cosmos will be hosting the New York Red Bulls at Short Stadium on June 14th. Columbus Crew will be hosting Indy 11 on June 17th. Sporting Kansas City will be hosting Minnesota United on June 18th. San Antonio Scorpions will be at FC Dallas on June 14th. Carolina RailHawks hosting Chivas USA on June 14th. Atlanta Silverbacks hosting Real Salt Lake on June 14th. These are the games that we're going to have to wait, watch, and see while we're watching our World Cup games. It should be a lot of fun. It should be exciting. I know I cannot wait. For those of you that are just curious to know, yes, the draw is out. for the teams that will win round four and advance into the fifth round of the 2014 U.S. Open Cup. As we get ready for that, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. And I know that I cannot wait to get this going, the World Cup, the U.S. Open Cup, everything else. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the Open Cup real quick. And we're going to talk about this draw that came out right about now, because it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I cannot wait for this to happen.
And once again, everyone, this is the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, as we will soon talk about the New York Red Bulls and their interesting ride of this season as we move forward here. And once again, the draw for the fifth round matches have already been pulled out by U.S. Soccer over at Soccer House in Chicago, Illinois. As I will now give you that information for those of you that were not able to get it. Basically, it's really simple. If the Philadelphia Union defeats Harrisburg City Islanders, they will host either the New York Red Bulls or the New York Cosmos in PPL Park in Chester, Pennsylvania. The date, if the Red Bulls are the winners, the date will be June 24th. If it's the New York Cosmos right now, there's no date at the moment, but I would have to assume it would be on Wednesday the 25th or Tuesday the 24th. We'll see what happens. But if the Harrisburg City Islanders beat the Philadelphia Union, they will travel to New York and New Jersey to face the New York Red Bulls at Red Bull Arena or the New York Cosmos at St. John's University over at Belsen Stadium in Queens, New York. Now, that is officially on the 24th. Now, here it is with New England, D.C., and, of course, with their opponents into round five, the round of 16 in the U.S. Open Cup. If New England and D.C. face each other, they'll be at Maryland Soccerplex in Boyd's, Maryland, just north of our nation's capital, if New England and D.C. United face each other. Or if it's the Richmond Kickers that wins, they'll be at D.C. United. Or if Rochester wins and New England wins, then New England will host the Rochester Rhinos over at Stevenson Field in Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, June 25th. Or if it's both USL pro teams winning, they'll face each other over at Richmond City Stadium in Richmond, Virginia, and that's at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If Chicago wins, they will host the winner of either the Indy 11 from the NASL or the Columbus Crew from MLS. But if the Columbus Crew wins and Pittsburgh wins, then Pittsburgh will be at Columbus. Or if Indy 11 wins, the Pittsburgh Riverhounds will go and face the Indy 11 at Carroll Stadium. San Antonio Scorpions, FC Dallas winner, will travel to Houston at BBVA Compass Stadium, or they will travel to face the Laredo Heat if Laredo defeats Houston. A lot of interesting scenarios. The winner of the LA Galaxy-Arizona United match will travel across the country once again to face the Carolina Railhawks if Carolina defeats Chivas USA. If not, Chivas USA will be taking on the Galaxy once again, but this time in the U.S. Open Cup at the StubHub Center, or
Chivas USA will travel to Arizona over in Peoria and will face Arizona United. So we got a lot of interesting matches for you. We got a lot of scrumptious matches for you. It's going to be interesting to see. We're still not done yet with this Open Cup situation. Hold on. As we turn the page, turning the page right now, page number 4. The San Jose Earthquakes, if they win and the Seattle Sounders win their match, San Jose will travel to Seattle and play the Sounders over at Starfire Sports Complex. If Sacramento defeats San Jose, then the Sacramento Republic will travel and face the Seattle Sounders. Or if PSA Elite does defeat the Seattle Sounders, then they'll travel to Sacramento and take on the Republic, or PSA Elite will be at San Jose Earthquakes if the Quakes do defeat the Sacramento Republic. And as we keep on going here, the Real Salt Lake Atlanta Silverbacks winner will travel and face the Colorado Rapids at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Commerce City, Colorado. And, of course, the either-or, Real Salt Lake Atlanta Silverbacks winner could travel and face Orlando City, who are still in the USL Pro League, as they'll play at the ESPN-wide World of Sports Complex in the Walt Disney World Resort.
And as we continue on here, Orlando City's under 23 team. If they defeat the Portland Timbers, then they will be facing the Sporting Kansas City and Sporting Park. Or if the Portland Timbers win, they will travel to Sporting Park to take on Sporting Kansas City. Or if Orlando City under 23s win, they'll be at Minnesota United, or Portland Timbers defeat Orlando City's under 23 squad, they'll be at Minnesota United. So that is your U.S. Open Cup situation. And as we get ready for these fourth round games from June 11th all the way through June 18th. So that should be interesting to see. Now, New York Red Bull segment here, and before we talk about the match against Sporting Kansas City, here is Jürgen Menke, communications officer for CONCACAF, as he pulls the balls for the group involving the New York Red Bulls and the CONCACAF Champions League.
The third team coming out of pot number one, also from the United States, the New York Red Bulls. New York Red Bulls qualified to this CONCACAF Champions League by virtue of the Supporter Shield in 2013, which means the team with the best record in the regular season. New York Red Bulls will position in group number 3, position number 1. Next, out of pot number 2, Canada number 1. Canada number 1 will go in the group of the New York Red Bulls. Remember, Canada number 3 will be either the Montreal Impact or Toronto FC after they define their championships, which is actually being defined in the next 2 weeks. So we will have that representative with the name right there. Third team to come out of pot number 3 is Club Deportivo FAS from El Salvador. Club Deportivo FAS will go to group number 3, position number 3, joining the New York Red Bulls and the Canadian team to be determined.
This is the Red Bulls segment now, and, you know, ladies and gentlemen, half of my predictions came true. I don't know if you remember, I think it was the last week's show or maybe 2 weeks ago, but I said for the New York Red Bulls, if they're going to get out of this group, And travel was the big key here. Travel, in my opinion, was the big, big key for the New York Red Bulls to win this group. And at the same time, they got to take this thing seriously. They have to go out and take this thing seriously when August rolls around. I said, and I hoped they would get the Canadian team or whoever's going to win the Canadian championship. And if they're going to draw someone from the Caribbean, I hoped it'd be Bayamon FC out of Puerto Rico. Not because, Puerto Rico's a nice place to visit if you go on vacation, for the beaches, for the drinks, and for the girls, and for everything else. And I can't say that now with the girls because I'm married, but that's okay. I got friends. I know my friend Ignacio Rodriguez down in Puerto Rico, who's the general manager of Bayamon FC. I said that this would be probably the best group that the Red Bulls can draw into. Half of my predictions were correct because when I was watching the stream from CONCACAF's website, seeing how everything was being drawn, pot one, pot two, pot three, or A, B, and C, pot one, I didn't care which group the Red Bulls were going to be drawn into because it's not that big of a deal, to be honest. If they're in a group, they're in a group. That's all that it should be. But it's that second pot that I was concerned for, because when you saw the first ball being picked out of pot two or pot B, first Real España, and they went to play for Pachuca. Then it was Deportivo Saprissa going in the group with Sporting Kansas City. The third ball, which was interesting to see that happen, that the ball that had the paper saying DC United opened up on its own, and they had to pull it out. They could not redraw it. They had to pull it out, and they had to put DC United in Group 4 with Taro FC. And then it's that fourth ball. The fourth ball you were concerned for. And when it said Canada won, I have to admit, when it said Canada won, I was pumped, because that means the travel for the Red Bulls, depending on what the schedule is going to be and when they go, they have an easy road for one game to go and face either Toronto FC for a second trip to BMO Field or second trip up to Montreal, first trip over to Stade Saputo. That was huge for the Red Bulls. Halfway done, halfway going, and then Portland Timbers went to Group 5, Cruz Azul Group 6, Isidro Metapan Group 7, Club America Group 8. Now, I was hoping and praying that Puerto Rico's Bayamon FC would be picked third in the third pot. Unfortunately, it did not happen. They're facing Club Deportivo FAS, who is a tough side down in El Salvador. But once again, the Red Bulls, which I believe should be ready to take on this team, to take them on, and should get out of the group. I think a fully loaded, healthy side that will be ready to play in this CONCACAF Champions League season should be ready to advance out of the group. We all have to wait tomorrow night to see what's going to happen between the Montreal Impact and the Toronto FC, who's going to take that title. At the moment, it's 1-1 after the first leg. Montreal has the away goal. If Montreal can keep that 1-1, if it's a 0-0 draw, they will advance. If it's a 1-1 draw, obviously it's going to extra time. If it's going to be a 2-2 draw, Toronto will advance on the away goals. So whatever Montreal needs to do, they have to do it more than Toronto does. And hopefully we'll get a free stream from MLS to show it, or if we can try and get a stream to see it. I would love to see what would happen once this situation gets taken care of. Love to see what would happen once we have this situation over and done with. Because I would like to see maybe the Red Bulls travel back to Montreal. I wouldn't mind them traveling back up to Toronto. You know. I wouldn't mind it. I wouldn't mind it at all. I really think that going back up to Canada, I mean, once again, you know, they could just take the train up there, don't they? Or they can just quickly fly up there. I mean, it's not that hard. It's really not that hard. Because I really think that this will be a good group and a solid group for the Red Bulls to try to advance out of it. Now, once again, we're not going to know the schedule till a couple of weeks later, probably. Or maybe if you don't want to bother with it right now, wait till the World Cup is over. That's fine. But these are now four important games added on to the Red Bulls that they got to play. These are very important games that the Red Bulls are going to have to play, and they're going to have to do it very well. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. So we'll see what happens once everything gets taken care of. Now let's move on to some interesting news. Unfortunately, Dax McCarty is going to miss a couple of weeks, which in a certain way, it's not that bad. And this is from Brian Lewis of the New York Post. As Dax McCarty apparently has been playing with a very bad knee. It's going to sideline him for a couple of weeks. So basically, they're only going to miss, with him right now, this road game this coming Sunday at New England against the Revolution, and then, of course, the U.S. Open Cup match, the fourth-round match, over in Long Island against the Cosmos at Shewart Stadium. Apparently, Mike Petke, this is a quote from Mike Petke, who said, in the first half, Dax took a pretty bad knock to his knee at Sporting Kansas City on the 1-1 draw. He somehow finished, made it through the game, an MRI on his knee, and the situation looks like a couple of weeks, Coach Mike Petke said. And, of course, everyone saw Dax's tweet saying, now the tweet from earlier makes sense, bummed, I'm missing a few games, but thankfully the injury wasn't worse, time to get the body right. Let's hope Dax can get back out there and play, hopefully in July. We'll see what happens. But you know what? If you think about it, it's kind of pretty good in a certain way because, okay, he'll miss New England. He's going to miss the Open Cup game. And if they do beat the Cosmos, they'll play end of May. And hopefully he'll get some minutes maybe if the knee is ready to go. And he'll probably come off the bench in the fifth round if the Red Bulls do advance into the fifth round. So we'll see what happens there. And then, of course, the home game against Toronto FC on that Friday night. And once again, so we'll see what happens. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in all those situations. But right now, I think we got ourselves an interesting June, two league games, possibly one, two Open Cup games, and then, of course, that bit of a break. So we'll see what happens. As we move forward here and we get to – let's get to the match over at against Sporting Kansas City. Terrible first half, no doubt about it. Sporting Kansas City had their way with the Red Bulls. Thank goodness for Luis Robles. being there. Yes, one got past him, but then after that he said no more. Very interesting to see that goal that was scored to make supposedly 2-0, but Robles had the ball, and the attacker just bumped into him to knock the ball out of his hands. That went into the net, and, you know, they waved that off, thank God, because that would have been a real crappy goal to allow when Robles has it in his hands, and you can't do that with the keeper. Accidental or not, still, it was a crappy thing to do, and it would have been even a lot worse if the referee would have allowed that goal to stand, because if that would have been allowed to stand, and we've never seen this before, obviously. We've never seen this before in MLS, but who remembers watching an Arsenal match where Arsenal kicked the ball out? I believe it was, or it probably was the other way around. I do remember a game when Arsenal was playing at Highbury before they built the Emirates. There was an injury on the field, and I believe Arsenal threw the ball in, or it was the other team that threw the ball in, and they were trying to throw it back towards the opposition, so, you know, the gentlemanly thing to do. And unfortunately, it was one of the players on the same side who threw the ball in. He attacked the net, and he scored the goal. And the other side was very upset, very furious, because, hey, what are you doing? We're throwing the ball back. He's like, what? He threw the ball in. He's like, yeah, he threw the ball in because our guy was hurt. Our guy was down on the pitch. You know, he needed treatment. He needed to get some treatment. I mean, this is a gentlemanly thing to do. Why are you scoring a goal on us when you should have done the gentlemanly thing by letting our keeper have the ball or kicking it out, you know, kicking it out of bounds away from the net? And I do remember the FA or the Premier League saying, we're going to replay the game because that is the right thing to do. I believe I remember Arsene Wenger saying that's wrong, that shouldn't have happened, we would like to replay the game. Because I'm telling you right now, if that goal would have stood, I would have loved to have seen Major League Soccer make an announcement to say, New York Red Bulls at Sporting Kansas City, match will be replayed, if that goal did count. Because Robles had the ball in his hands, and he got it knocked out of his hands by the attacking player who bumped Robles and bumped the ball out of his hands to put in the net. If that goal did stand against the Red Bulls, I would have loved to have seen a replay. I definitely would have loved to have seen a replay, because that would have been an absolutely tragic if that goal stood. So we'll see what happens. Well, obviously we won't see what happens. They wiped it out, so that's a good thing. And the Red Bulls got off to a better second half. Dare to BWP. BWP, Bradley Wright Phillips. He's still hot. He's still smoking. He's still putting in the goals. He had that one miss of a chance in Toronto, but it still doesn't deter him. Bradley Wright Phillips, once again, with a big-time goal. With a big, big-time goal. And goes out, does the damage, and now he has scored 10 goals. Yeah, 10 goals in 7 games. He has scored 10 goals in 7 games, 11 altogether. He's on fire. And let's see what happens on Sunday at New England if the Red Bulls can't continue this. Let's see what's going to happen if Bradley Wright Phillips will continue to be hot, to continue to score, continue to look like the big man on campus as he is, I'll say it right now, I think he's on the verge of becoming the first Red Bull player, Metro Star player, to score 20 goals in a season. 11 down, 9 to go. This could be exciting. I'll be honest with you. Juan Pablo Angel had his opportunity in his first year at the Red Bulls. He only got 19. One less. Could have gotten 20 in the final regular season game over in Los Angeles at the then known as the Home Depot Center, now known as the StubHub Center. Could have had 20 back in 2007. Did not happen. Bradley Wright Phillips is on a tear, on an absolute tear. He needs 9 more for 20. And what happens if he does have enough time in league play to go more than 20? We're talking Wando Roy Lassiter territory. We're talking about Wondolowski, who nearly had an opportunity to break Roy Lassiter's record, and now we have an opportunity, if possible. If I'm getting ahead of myself, I am. But this is where I have a sense of these things. This is where I believe that Bradley Wright Phillips, at this point in time right now, all you have to think about is 20 goals for the season. Not talking about Bradley Wright Phillips, I'm talking about you Red Bull supporters. Talking about Bradley Wright Phillips converting 9 more times. Converting 9 more times for 20. And here's the funny thing. I think he can do it. I really think he can do it. That's how much, not so much it's faith, but belief. Because I truly believe that Bradley Wright Phillips will score 20 goals this season. You pray to God there's no injury. You pray to God there's no slump. Just feed him the ball and let him do the rest. He's converted, in these 11 goals, 2 hat tricks, converted three spot kicks out of that 11. You can't tell me he's red hot right now. You can't tell me Bradley Wright Phillips right now is the hottest striker in MLS at this point in time. Right now, BWP is daring. And if he's daring to get 20, go for it. Go out, get another hat trick if possible. Try and get 2 if you can. But I'm telling you guys right now, Bradley Wright Phillips is looking sensational. And I wouldn't put it past him if he can go and get 20 right now. Because Giovanni Savarese never did it in his league season. Clint Mathis never did it in a league season. Juan Pablo Angel hasn't done it in a league season. He was the closest in his first season. He was the closest with 19. And we shall see what's going to happen this coming Sunday at Gillette Stadium if Bradley Wright Phillips can add to the tally. Because if he can add to the tally, then we got ourselves a season here, boys. I haven't seen this type of goal scoring streak or spree since Clint Mathis, to be honest. And Juan Pablo Angel has had great goal scoring moments. He's had, of course, like we said, he had that attempt to get 20 in the final league in his first league season. The best goal I think I've ever seen Juan Pablo Angel score before Red Bull Arena was open, was finished construction, was a goal against New England Revolution with Francis Doe, because what happened was New England was up 2-1. And Giant Stadium, that normally buzzes for the NFL, there were some of those moments in the playoffs that the Red Bulls could do and could do right. But Juan Pablo Angel really showed that he was on fire. And that game against New England Revolution, where the Revs are up 2-1, Francis Doe made a fantastic pass to Angel. It was a bit of a bender, but Angel timed his run perfectly, and once he passed both defenders and got the ball, he was onside. Once he passed both center backs, he was onside, and then you heard the crowd buzzing. And that buzzing basically meant to you, sounded like to you that, oh, we're going to see a goal here. And then it was Angel who blasted it past Matt Reese. And the crowd went from buzz to a roar. And that, in my mind, was probably the best goal scored when you're talking about anticipation from the crowd. And I keep saying this. If you're a hockey fan and you see a great play, and I'll take this current Stanley Cup playoff run by the New York Rangers against the Montreal Canadiens game 4, and it was more the Derek Brassard goal against Montreal Canadiens, because when Dan Girardi made that long stretch pass deep within his end in the second period, with 1 minute remaining left in the second period, that stretch pass to Derek Brassard, when he got it, it was that kind of a rumble, that kind of a, oh, and then when he ripped it, it went in, and then the crowd explodes. That's what Angel's goal against New England in 2007 did on that day at Giant Stadium. That was a hell of a goal. Hell of a goal. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I loved it. It was fantastic. It was awesome. And that's the feeling you're going to get now with Bradley Wright Phillips. You're going to see those types of moments coming back either at Red Bull Arena or if you're with your friends watching it at your home or at the pub or over at Legends or over in Hoboken, wherever you are. Those are those moments you're going to see out of Bradley Wright Phillips right now. Henry will still have his magical moments, but right now Bradley Wright Phillips is a magical moment. Every time he handles the ball and he goes towards the net and converts. He's got 11. He probably should have had 12, but he's got 11. You watch. I'm telling you right now, you watch. Bradley Wright Phillips is going to be something special here when he is going to get those moments to score goals. Now, let's finish off here with the U.S. Open Cup match against the New York Cosmos. Once again, this is going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun over at Shewhart Stadium on June the 14th. But once again, I just feel that, and I understand U.S. Soccer and the Open Cup Committee, why they wanted to keep with, like, geographical pairings and everything and all that stuff. And you still could have done that. But, you know, there's a lot of World Cup going on here. And I understand that there's going to be at least one round that's going to get blitzed hard. And that's the fourth round. And at the same time, didn't U.S. Soccer once again say we cannot allow an MLS team and their USL Pro affiliate to be playing in an Open Cup game unless they're forced to, maybe like around the quarterfinals or the semifinals or something like that? So why are the Union playing the City Islanders right now in the fourth round? The Cosmos, in my opinion, should be playing Philadelphia Union, while Harrisburg should be playing the New York Red Bulls. And then when you get to the fifth round, there's more breathing room, okay? There's more breathing room to allow in the fifth round, and if it did happen, the Cosmos and the Red Bulls would have played each other. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying I don't want the matchup. I'm not saying I don't want to see these two teams fight it out for the good of New York City and New York soccer and everything else like that. No. What I'm saying is that I just feel that this time around, during the fourth round, I think it's the wrong time. If these two sides were going to advance and face each other in the round of 16, then, hey, let's go for it. Let's go and attack it. Let's go and do it. And I understand they couldn't play Wednesday, June 11th because Shewhart wasn't available. But here's my question to Hofstra University, if you don't mind me saying this. Is there graduation going on at Hofstra University on Wednesday, June 11th? And is it at Shewhart? Because if it is, fine, I understand. But if there's nothing else going on at Shewhart, why couldn't you have the match there? Or, of course, since I just found out that the New York Cosmos train at Mitchell Field in the athletic complex, there's a stadium, there's stands there, both sides. You can have a match there. It's a grass field. You can have it in Mitchell Athletic Field. I'm not saying it should be at Belson. I'm just saying it should be at Mitchell Field in the athletic complex. There's a stadium there. You can have soccer there. It's not a big deal. It's easy to get to. But if it's more about availability, and I know you won the draw to, you won the coin flip to host it, fine, I understand that. That's not my complaint. My complaint is maybe you should have probably had it June 11th at Mitchell Field. There's enough room there. I know there's no end line seats. I understand that. But still, you could have had it there if Shewhart wasn't available. I don't think it's that expensive to have a camera crew there, or at least to rent the facility. I mean, you're practicing there, for God's sakes. That's the situation, and that's the only complaint I'm having right now. I just think that we should have had Harrisburg come to play the Red Bulls and the Cosmos playing Philadelphia. And then whoever wins those respective games, if it's the Cosmos beating the Union, and if it's the Red Bulls beating Harrisburg, then yes, let's go round five. Let's have it in Long Island. That's all I'm saying. It's not about being scared. It's not about being, oh, you're worried about this. I'm not worried about anything. I want a good match. I want a fantastic match. I just feel right now that the way it's set up currently, that it's just not the right time. And I blame Major League Soccer for scheduling games on Wednesday, June 11th, from preventing the majority of these U.S. Open Cup Round 4 games involving MLS not to be played there, because there's going to be three teams. I think D.C. United is going to face Montreal, and I believe it's going to be Portland versus Dallas. Now, I understand MLS wanted to bring the scheduling out really quickly, but when I saw that date come up Wednesday, June 11th, that there's going to be games being played before the opener on Thursday, June the 12th, I had my concerns. I'll be honest. I'm being honest. I had my concerns because I did not want to see the Open Cup not being treated with the respect that it's been getting for a long time. For these last couple of years now, because U.S. Soccer has done a great job. U.S. Soccer has done a fantastic job running the Open Cup. It's getting bigger and better. More needs to be done. I keep saying more and more and more and more and more needs to be done. But still, this is the situation that I have to say that Major League Soccer did a very bad thing by allowing Portland FC Dallas match to be played on Wednesday night, June 11th, as well as, look, I don't care if Montreal would have faced Vancouver or Toronto there. If you want to let DC face Montreal, fine. You know, that's the one team that's not going to play in round four on that day. But this is a mistake that should never have been made. And that's all I'm saying. League-wide, MLS-wise, that's a mistake that shouldn't have been made. And you know what? I remember talking about this on Big Soccer, and then someone said, well, you know what? USL Pro League teams that could be in the U.S. Open Cup, you know, they can't. They have league games being played. They can't do that. Look, you can change the scheduling. Premier League teams, you know, teams are going to be playing league games on FA Cup dates in the semifinals, quarterfinals, final, you know, whatever, not the final, but the semifinals, the final, the quarterfinal, round of 16. They've rescheduled games to fit in for Open Cup matches, or FA Cup matches, I should say. For FA Cup, USL Pro teams could have done the same thing. It's not a big deal. It's not a huge deal. They can change up the scheduling a bit. And that's all I'm saying. I just think that for the New York Red Bulls facing the New York Cosmos in this situation only, maybe you should have at least let Philly play the Cosmos and let Harrisburg play the Red Bulls, and then you can just go ahead and schedule those two teams if they win, schedule them for the fifth round. That's all I'm saying. It's more about scheduling and the World Cup because this is going to be the week coming, not this week, next week, that's coming. That's going to be a little bit more difficult than normal. And I just think I just think that it could have been better. And maybe it could have been publicized a lot better when I'm, you know, promoting it better, I should say. I mean, it's being promoted very well, obviously. But when you're talking about no interference like from a Gold Cup or from a World Cup or anything like that, then probably people would probably go out more. But this is we'll see what happens. Look, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. At least I can admit when I'm wrong, I'm going to be wrong. I'll admit it if I'm wrong, and that's fine. This is just my personal preference because I want this game to be truly spotlighted. It's, you know, I mean, everyone in this town, they know. Yankees fans, Met fans, they jaw away at each other. New York Ranger fans, New York Islander fans, they jaw away at each other. Jets fans, Giants fans, they are jawing away with each other. Now the Nets are in Brooklyn. Brooklyn's rising up again. Now it's Brooklyn people taking on New York Knicks fans. You know, the jawing will go. This is the only town right now that will be considered, you know, you got two of everything, possibly three if you count the Devils in New Jersey. Some are saying you don't count New Jersey. Well, guess what? Tough. That's why it's called, basically, greatest city in the world. I mean, you look at Chicago, they only have two baseball teams. You look at Los Angeles, They only have two basketball teams, two NBA teams. New York, it's two of everything. It's always going to be two of everything in the same city. Now, we'll see what happens next year when it's three soccer teams. Because let's, just for those of you that did not know this, or if you know your baseball history, that's fine. The San Francisco Giants used to play in Manhattan along the Harlem River across from Yankee Stadium. The Dodgers in Los Angeles used to play in Brooklyn. That's why Citi Field is modeled after Ebbets Field on the outside, because the owner of the Mets, Fred Wilpon, is an old Brooklyn Dodgers fan. Because back in the day, before there was American football, and before there was the NBA, and of course before there was hockey, well, hockey came around actually first too with baseball, but the point is that there used to be three baseball teams in the city within the five boroughs. And now you're going to have, when next year comes around, New York City FC in the Bronx, you're going to have the Cosmos still in Long Island, and you're still going to have the Red Bulls over in Harrison, New Jersey. But guess what? This is the New York City area. This is the tri-state area of New York City. Yes, I understand. Connecticut doesn't mean anything because you're in Connecticut. You're not New York City proper. Well, New York City proper can kiss my ass, because there's no such thing anymore as New York City proper. We all came from the five boroughs once, most of us. Our parents felt that they had to move. So some moved to southern Connecticut. Some moved to northeastern, north-central, northwestern New Jersey. But the ties still go towards New York City, whether you like it or not. And guess what? Tough. Where are the Jets and the Giants playing? New Jersey. Well, they still have New York on their helmets. So what does that mean? You know what that means? It means tough. You can claim New York City proper all you want. It doesn't count anymore. New York City proper is done. It's gone. It doesn't mean anything. I'm from the Bronx. Grand Concourse, near Bedford Park Boulevard, Jerome Avenue, Webster Avenue, the Botanical Garden, the Bronx Zoo, Fordham University. That is where I used to live in that area. But because my parents moved me out of there, not that I wanted to leave, but they moved me out of there, I don't count anymore. Sit down, you NYC proper ninnies, and shut up. I want to thank my guests. My guest, actually, it's John Dugu from Big Soccer. Get ready for USA versus Nigeria postgame show this coming Saturday night, the final match in the send-off series. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.